And I love books and I love, you know, reading stuff online. But once you actually start doing something, investing in real estate, you learn so much more through actually doing it, maybe making mistakes or at least like coming across new concepts than any books, any research. So,
hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Gentle Art of Crushing It podcast. My name is Nathan Murith with Undoor Properties. I'm your Monday host. I'm one of five hosts who bring you conversations three times a week on a variety of topics around real estate, business, and personal motivation. Our goal with this podcast is to help you succeed in whatever target you're aiming at. We're all committed to finding the best and the brightest people who aren't just talking about doing big things, but are actually taking the steps to achieve their dreams and wanting to help others along the way. And today's conversation with Anton Ivanov is no different. Anton shares his fantastic, inspiring story about getting started investing in real estate, you know, remotely, as well as building the best software out there for real estate investors. He is the founder of DealCheck.io and Rentcast.io. Let's hop into the conversation with Anton. Awesome. Hey, Anton, welcome. Welcome back. I say back for those who don't know, because Anton and I have spoken in a different context, but we'll talk more about that in a second or two. But I'm very excited to have Anton today to tell us all about his story. So Anton, welcome. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Nathan. Thanks for having me on the show. Always happy to be here and chat with you.
Yeah. And I'm excited about this one in particular. I don't want to spoil it. We'll get into it. But why don't we just kick things off with you telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, your story, what you do in life and what you do in real estate, if anything at all.
You know, I didn't grow up in the United States. I grew up in Eastern Europe. And I moved to America with my family when I was about 14, 15, I think it was in the early 2000s, late 1990s. I already start to forget. This feels like it's been forever. So I finished high school here in the United States, lived in Cali for a while, and then I joined the Navy, actually the U.S. Navy, went active duty pretty much right out of high school. So I did a long tour overseas in Japan. I was there for 5 years out of my 6-year contract. You know, I would say like back then, you know, I was young, early 20s, late teens, didn't have a lot of direction, you know, what I wanted to do with my life. They ask you, what do you want to be as a kid? And I think I wanted to be an astronaut. I remember when I was like 10, 12 years old, it sounded like the coolest thing ever. I ended up in the Navy. So not exactly what I wanted, but I do remember that's kind of when I started reading a lot of, I would say, self-improvement, self-development books, you know, both on kind of the personal side, relationship side, as well as financial side, because, you know, one thing I'll tell you that, you know, I love the Navy. I love the people I met there. I have nothing against it. I kind of did a lot of growing up there. But I quickly realized that is not what I wanted to do as my career. I was like, man, you know, and I was like on the bottom, right? I wasn't an officer. I was like the kind of the grunt, I guess. And is long days, you're on the ship, you know, you're sleeping in a little coffin bunk or rack, whatever you want to call it. And I just remember laying there and thinking, like, many nights, I'm like, there is no way I can do this forever. And it wasn't just the Navy. It was even more like this was my first full-time job. You know, I started paying my own bills, kind of the whole adult reality kicked in. And I remember I just decided, like, look, I can't do this for, you know, 30, 40 years or whatever it takes to get to your retirement age, like the typical, you know, career.
Before we jump into the show, we wanted to let you know that this episode is brought to you by EveryREITool.com. EveryREITool is the most comprehensive online catalog of resources for real estate investors and professionals. Whether you are looking for the best deal analyzer, the most loved syndication platform, fix and flip rehab calculators, dialers, lead generation solutions, rent collectors, or the next real estate book to read, every REI tool has it all. Quickly and easily find the best software, apps, services, books, podcasts, and courses to help accelerate and grow your real estate business by heading over to everyreitool.com. And don't forget to sign up to get exclusive product reviews, promos, and discount codes. Everyreitool.com. Now, on to the show.
At this point in time, were you thinking 30, 40 years like in the Navy, or not necessarily was like doing anything but kind of similarly constrained to, you know, that grunt, you know, 9 to 5 or, you know, 8 to 6 or whatever it might have been, you know, in the Navy?
Yeah, well, it was both, actually. I mean, I was pretty quickly dawned on me that I didn't want to stay in the Navy. Again, it was just kind of too rigid of an environment for me, and not a lot of even career growth potential, you know, which there is in the Navy, just, you know, it's kind of limited, right? There's like rules for everything, how often you can advance, how much of a raise you can get. Like, it's a very rigid environment. Yeah. And I realized that I just don't fit in that super well. But at the same time, it was that other whole career thing as well. I was like, okay, well, I'll get out, I'll get a job, and then what? You know, how many years will it take for me to retire, to save up enough money to work here? So it was kind of both. And that's where I think the kind of the seeds of both real estate investing, other investing, and entrepreneurship got planted in me. It's just, it was that, like, kind of that feeling that I was like, I can't do this for, you know, I can't do the normal path, I guess, you know, that they say just work, you know, retire when you're 50, 60, if you're lucky, and then enjoy life. I was like, no, this isn't going to work. So that's what got me a lot onto personal development, personal finance. You know, I read a ton of books. I probably went through like the, you know, 2-3 year time span where I read, it would have to be like 50 or something, or 60 books. I think, you know, most of the famous books, most of like kind of the, what they recommend you read, both on, on kind of individual growth and finance growth. I remember I sped through them, like took a lot of notes, you know, started working on my goals. Actually, that was, I think, a big driver that started the whole process of where I am today with my life. Is I remember I read somewhere there's this exercise that they have you do. No idea what book it was or where I read it, but it's like, you know, sit down and imagine your ideal life. Like, pretty much, you know, where do you wake up, who are you with, what you're doing throughout your day. Kind of go through that process for a few days, actually, or a week, just writing random thoughts down, and then use that as your initial kind of template for your goals or for your long-term, you know, vision for your life. And that was super helpful for me because, you know, that's kind of when I more articulated all those kind of thoughts I had, that I didn't want to work so long. I wanted to retire sooner, you know, reach financial independence in a much earlier stage in life. And kind of the goals I set back then is actually what drove me all the way to now. Actually, I still kind of have the little spreadsheet that I use for that. And,
oh, nice.
And has been super helpful. Anyway, fast forward a few years. We'll kind of get into how I got into investing, I guess, would be probably the next evolution. So actually, while I was in the Navy, still serving out there in Japan, my parents passed away. It was kind of unexpected. You know, they had some health issues, so they were pretty young. They owned a condo in San Diego. So this is Southern California, where they used to live. I inherited that property. You know, I had no experience with property management, obviously, even buying. I never bought a property. I just, you know, I lived actually in government housing all up until then. So very limited experience with property ownership. I didn't really know. I was remote. I was in Japan. This was in California. So I kind of went through, you know, the initial process, kind of took everything over. And then I talked to a few folks and I was like, you know what, let me keep this as a rental property for now. Let me finish my tour, you know, go back stateside. Maybe I'll live there. Maybe I'll figure out what to do with it then. So that became my first rental property. And I kind of was thrust into it. I guess I call it accidental landlord, so to speak. But I remember that, and it wasn't a great, like, cash flowing property. It was expensive. You know, it's Southern California. So it's like, of course. Loan payments are huge, expenses are pretty high, rents are high, but not like it's not the perfect cash flow property by any means. But it was like a little bit, a few hundred a month trickling in my bank account. And that's when I kind of got into more focused into real estate investing, because I was like, hey, this seems like a great way to build long-term wealth. You have an asset that's appreciating in value, most of the time, or at least over the long term. And at the same time, if you manage it right, buy it right, it's generating you consistent passive cash flow. And I love that because that fit very well into my goals. I wanted to become financially independent. And to do that, I know I needed a passive income stream, or at least, an income stream that didn't, that wasn't tied to a job directly. And real estate played super well into that. So I got really interested in that again, read a bunch of books. I'm like a self learner, if you didn't catch that. So I'm, if I like a subject, I start reading a lot about it. So I read a ton about real estate. And then that kind of set me up for when I did leave the Navy after 6 years. I moved back to Southern California, San Diego, with my girlfriend, who then became my wife. And we transitioned to more normal careers. I went into software development, pretty much right out of the Navy after a few years. And then she did some work for the government and stuff, but it was more kind of normal life. We weren't traveling so much as we did with the Navy. And we continued our real estate investing. So we started by buying a duplex in Southern California that we house hacked. If for folks who are not familiar, that's when you like buy a multifamily property, maybe two, three units, you live in one of the units and then you rent out the other units. I think it's a perfect strategy to get started with real estate investing because A, it allows you to take advantage of owner-occupied financing, which is usually much better rates, better terms. We use actually the VA loan on that one, which is available for active duty
Of course.
military and retired. But there's an FHA loan, which is fairly similar, where you can put a low down payment and buy an owner-occupied property that you have to live in, but it works out for a multifamily because you're still collecting rental income from the other unit. So that became like our first more normal investment, where we bought the property, we did some rehab work on it. We're learning a ton at this point because I always say, folks say like, hey, what are the best book? What is the best blog? And I love books and I love, reading stuff online. But I will tell you, once you actually start doing something, be that running a business, investing in real estate, or just working on your personal finances, you learn so much more through actually doing it, maybe making mistakes, or at least like coming across new concepts than any books, any research. So that's that whole like analysis paralysis. Like you hear people like, yeah, I've read every book on real estate. I've been studying it for 10 years, and you ask them, well, how many
Haven't done
property you own?
anything.
They're, oh, I'm still working on my first one. If it's been a few years, I would say it's probably time to
Couldn't agree more.
to pull the trigger, right? So yeah, so we started with that duplex. It was a great investment. We still own that property. And then following that, we kind of looked at the California market. This was probably like 2013, 14. It was really heating up after that recession. We had the 08, 09. Prices in Cali were just going through the roof. And we realized like, hey, this isn't going to work, like if we're just focusing on California investing, because we weren't making that much money at the time. And every property you buy in California, you're talking like 20% down payment could be in the over 100,000 just because of the property values. And we wanted to really keep scaling our real estate. So we started looking out of state just at much really for cheaper markets. But also we realized you can find much better kind of long-term returns on your invested capital in more linear cities. They're still really good, fundamentally. I always like when I focus out of state markets, I look at strong economic kind of demographic and job markets. So these are like established cities that have diverse industries, and they're not really focused on one thing, and not like those super hot cities. So we looked at a few, like Atlanta fit that criteria, Nashville back then, Kansas City, Missouri. So these are kind of like secondary markets, maybe like not as hot growing as like California or some of the East Coast, or like the Phoenix that just blew up in the last 10 years, but still very strong. So we started doing out of state investing. Again, just so we can buy more properties for cheaper, but also so we could, get the most value for every dollar that we actually invest in the properties. And we ended up buying, I think it was four turnkey properties. There was one in Atlanta and a few in Birmingham, Alabama. This was kind of a way for us to get to know out-of-state investing, because it is like another kind of stepping stone or another leap, if you would, from just buying locally. Because here you can drive around, see the property. If something is like going on super crazy, you can, go there, respond, and help in person, even if you have management in place. Out of state, like, you're not going to be there tomorrow.
For those turnkey properties, the four, like you said, one in Birmingham, or two, three in Birmingham, and one in Alabama, I think you said, or Birmingham is in Alabama, but the four properties that you bought,
In
did you
Atlanta, the
get?
other one was.
Oh, got it. Yeah, sorry. Did you get those through a turnkey provider, or did you get them off the MLS, or how did that work? Because that's something that
No, so.
oftentimes people wonder about.
Yeah, so we went through a turnkey provider. I believe it was Norada Real Estate. I think they're still around. And actually, yeah, it was Marco from there, I remember. He's a great guy. The way I approach turnkey properties, there's a lot of kind of hate on them, because I think people, especially like new real estate investors, who just want to be super passive, they go in with a, I would say, unrealistic expectations, right? They think, hey, it's a turnkey property. That means I don't have to do anything, to just get it. I pretty much just write a check, and the property is mine. It already has a tenant. It's gonna have no issues. It's fully rehabbed. And honestly, none of those are really true. I would say buying turnkey properties is just another way to find properties, right? You can find properties on the MLS. You can find properties like through your realtor. You can just drive around, kind of driving for dollars type of stuff. There's different ways to find property, and turnkey is just one of them. But ultimately, once you buy the property, it all kind of becomes the same path, right? You're the owner. You're responsible for the tenants, what's going on with that, for maintenance, for anything else. Just because it's a turnkey that they just did a rehab on, doesn't mean you're not going to have maintenance issues or tenant issues later. No, every property, even if it's new construction, is going to have some problems. So I think if you research the market, so focus on, good fundamental markets. And that was one of the reasons we avoided like more hot turnkey cities. Like, you hear like Ohio is very popular, like Indianapolis. Like, I'm sure that you can be successful there, but these are like dirt cheap markets, but they're dirt cheap for a reason, right? I've had a few friends that bought property in like Ohio, like Cleveland or something like that. Not the best areas. They paid like $40,000 for it 10 years ago. It's still worth $40,000 today. So if you adjust that for inflation, you factor in all the rising, property taxes, insurance, which always creep up. Yeah, like, they're on a net loss on that property, because, if you look at those neighborhoods and cities, they have very little population and job growth, very little economic growth. Sometimes it's negative, actually, like, meaning people are leaving those cities. And in my experience, and through talking and kind of reading, I think one of the keys to being a successful long-term rental property investor, like where you're buying property and holding it for, long, 5, 10, maybe forever, is if your property values and rents go up. Like, those are the keys, because, over time, inflation will cut into your profit and increase expenses. But if your property values are appreciating and the rents are going up, you're going to be super successful. But the only way those are going to happen is if the city's economy, job, and population are also growing. If they're shrinking or they're staying the same, you're not going to see property value growth, because that's driven by demand. You're not going to see rental growth, because that's also driven by demand. So that's why we honed in on kind of macroeconomic factors first. And I think if you look those up, and pick a market, even if it's for turnkey properties, that fits those, you're going to be successful long term, even though you will probably pay like close to market value, as well as, maybe even a little above for turnkey properties, right? That's another big negative. Sometimes on the MLS or just private deals, you can get a little discount, buy a property below market value. With turnkeys, they're probably going to price them right there, like the max they can, because obviously that's their business. They want to sell the property for maximum profit. But it's fine. Like, for example, in Atlanta, I'll give you a realistic example. I think we bought that turnkey property for like 85 or 80,000. This was back in I want to say 2014, 15 time frame. Great house, like a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, like solid construction, you know, good suburban neighborhood. So that property was 80, 85,000, and was renting originally for like 850. So it was like 1% rule, like borderline property, which I was happy with for turnkeys. Now that property, same exact property, we're t about 10 years later, it's worth like 150, 160, so almost double in price, and we're renting it for 15, 1600, also almost double in rent. And again, some of that obviously is because all the markets appreciated. We had a great like economic run the last 10 years, but it was also because Atlanta is a very stable growing city. You know, there's a lot of industry there, a lot of jobs, a lot of population growth for its like local area. It's a job and growth hub. And I think that has been one of the keys and kind of keeping the property values and rents going up. And obviously at the beginning from that turnkey property, we weren't collecting like a ton of cash flow, but now we are. And now it's absolutely a great investment if you look at long-term ROI, RRR. But again, I just think you need to approach turnkey properties realistically, you know, research the market, research the area. Obviously, research the provider, like look up some of their reviews on Better Business Bureau or something like that. If there are some scammy providers, you know, that you call that like lipstick on a pig if you ever heard it, just they go in, buy these like super cheap distressed properties, do the least amount of work, try to, you know, juice as much money from the investors out. So you just have to do your research. But it's like that with any property, any market. And I think if you just approach turnkey investing like that, like it's not zero work, it's you should do the work and you should kind of do your research. I think you can be very successful with them as we were. And it's a great stepping stone for those folks who want to invest out of state, but they're just kind of held back. You know, they want to eliminate some of the risk factors. They don't want to do their own rehabs like that. That was some of the reasons we chose it. And we've been very successful. And so after those turnkey properties, they kind of prepared us for out-of-state investing. And we were kind of ready to scale, I would say, you know, ready to buy more properties because we wanted to have like 40, 50 units was our original goal. And after that, we settled in on a more traditional approach. Which was kind of buy, you know, off MLS, off mar or off market through different channels, more like value add properties, specifically multifamily. And the reason we chose those is just so we can buy more units quicker, and then do a rehab on them, raise the rents, kind of improve operations, stabilize the properties. And that's exactly what we did in Kansas City most recently. Again, another market that we kind of settled in. Nothing like super better about it than Atlanta, for example, but it was just where I actually flew out there, met a lot of kind of local investors, local property managers, liked the city, you know, kind of established my local network there first and then started looking at properties. And we were lucky to get a lot of them off market there through various channels, a lot of fourplexes, so we could buy like, you know, five of them. That's 20 units right there. And we've been super successful with that. So now our portfolio, just kind of to sum up our journey with that, is we're at 40 units. I think it's 41 actually. And a lot of them are concentrated in Kansas City, but we still have those Atlanta properties, property in San Diego, you know, if we did kind of slow down our acquisition pace, I would say during the last couple of years. First, when COVID hit, it was just I was kind of unsure what the market would do. I actually thought we would have a much bigger correction or downturn than we did. So we were a bit cautious during that time. And then now the rates, you know, the rates are up there quite a bit, almost double that what we were paying for financing before. And the prices I still feel like are way out there, you know, way elevated than what they should be. So it's just I just feel like you still can find deals in this market. They're just not as plentiful. So instead, what we did is we focused a lot on operations, which I think is another like undervalued aspect. You know, once you get to 30, 40 plus units like we did, you can actually substantially increase your cash flow and returns with like small changes to, for example, decreasing your vacancies or improving like maintenance operations. Like we're talking like get your own maintenance people or handyman. If you have a lot of properties in a concentrated area and you're paying kind of retail maintenance prices, you will probably be better off if you actually took the time now to hire your own handyman, or you know, we're talking like plumbers or whoever else, or find your own crews than just outsourcing everything. So we did a lot of small stuff like tenant satisfaction to make sure we have good retention, you know, make sure we're keeping up the rents with market.
For context though, just here, Anton, for the properties that you have in Kansas City, do you self-manage those or this through property management, but you took on like the extra effort, tasks, and time to find your own, handyman, maintenance crews to kind of augment what the property managers were doing?
No, so we don't self-manage anything. Actually, it's funny, even when we bought that first duplex, we had a property manager managing like the upstairs unit. And I'll tell you why we did that. I have nothing against property management, self-managing, right? If you really want to do it, but A, I feel like my time is much better spent elsewhere. You know, meaning like if I look at how much I get paid per hour, for example, doing something else versus property management is actually a pretty cheap, like low paying job. If you actually look, you know, if you're paying that 8 or 10% to your property manager for the amount of work they do, I think it's a very reasonable rate. So for folks that like want to self-manage, especially a large portfolio, I always ask them like, is are you planning for this to be your full-time job? And if so, like calculate how much actually this will make you know, how much you're actually saving by not paying a property manager. And you might be surprised how low it actually is. So that was one reason. The second is we knew we planned to invest out of state and expand our portfolio. And I just think when you get especially to multi-state portfolios, it becomes much less realistic to self-manage. You know, I've heard of folks managing like a bunch of units out of state. But again, they're relying on local people to show units, to do the maintenance. I mean, you're not there, right? You don't live there. So it's impossible for you to handle that. So I just think, you know, especially if you're doing real estate at scale, management just makes a lot of sense. It does take effort, you know, to find a good management company to work with them. You know, if you want to tweak something that they do, you know, you kind of I call it coaching, which I did a lot of. Meaning like, nah, I'm not trying to get in their business. Obviously, that they know how to do their job, but at the same time, you know, you become like the CEO. That's how I think about it. You know, because real estate, you know, when you get to a large scale, it's pretty much a company. You have a lot of assets, you know, all these assets need work on them. You have other people working for you, be that maintenance and, you know, lenders and leasing agents and stuff like that. And your job as CEO is not to micromanage or do the work that you're paying other people to do yourself, but to pretty much steer the ship. You know, if you see inefficiencies, if you see areas of improvement, then step in there and help those people or work with them to make those improvements. So that's exactly what I was talking about for maintenance. So we would, you know, sometimes we would go and we'd ask a property management company like, hey, can we get an in-house person to manage maintenance or just small repairs for our units and maybe some of their other units? And that worked out really well. You know, sometimes property managers just need a little nudge. Like they, you know, they're large firms. A lot of times they've been doing stuff for like years the same way, and they just kind of get in the routine. That may not necessarily be bad, but it just can be improved. And that's one aspect that I like to focus on. Or, you know, like same with like rents. Like a lot of property managers I found tend to be like very conservative with their rent increases. And part of that is because they don't want to stir the boat, because if the unit does become vacant, like the tenant leaves because they don't want to pay that much, it's more work for them. They have to go do inspections, do turnover, you know, repairs, do leasing again. So for them, it's like, you know what, we just, you know, do a small little increase, everybody's happy, we just collect our 8% paycheck. But we actually went in and we like sat down with our property managers, and they've been great. Like the once we kind of got a relationship built with them, especially when you have more units, and they understand, because ultimately they will make more money if the rents go up, because they take a percentage of the rent, obviously. And even if it's a little more work. So we had like systems for like, hey, check the rent, you know, here's the reports you should run, like just kind of nudge them a little bit, work with them for a few months until they get a hang of it. until you know how you like doing stuff. And again, some of this stuff may not be like super important if you only have a few just properties, right? It's you're probably not gonna kind of I guess increase your cash flow returns by a substantial amount if you're just like super focused on one property at a time. Yeah, but when you get to a scale, again, this is more like 20, 30, 40 units, very small adjustments like 50% increase in rent on 50 units is a lot, is a good amount of money. So that's what we did, especially in the last few years as kind of real estate market, conditions changed a little bit. And again, I don't want to discourage anybody from investing. I think, and in Kansas City, even when we went in originally, we started looking on the MLS and it was super competitive there. There were a lot of bigger investment firms that could buy up these houses like the next day. I wouldn't even have a chance to look at them. So what we actually did, and I always encourage folks to do, is to not just focus on MLS and listed properties, because treat that as just not the only way to find properties, just one of the ways. There are so many other ways. We've done direct mail very well. Again, that's probably a topic for another conversation we can have sometime on the podcast, but that's a whole untapped, I feel like, strategy, because you can do it in a very efficient and kind of smaller scale way, which I've written before on, and be much more successful. We've had great relationships with local property managers and brokers and agents who've actually brought deals to us off market, which happens more often than most people realize. A lot of people are like, oh, well, if somebody wants to sell property, they're going to list it. And that's not true. There's a lot of bigger companies that want to offload a ton of property. And if they can find a buyer, even if it's like a little less than what they would list it for, they will probably go for that if they know it's reliable. They can close within like 30 days, right? So there's a lot of off-market deals happening. And basically, the more kind of lead generation channels you can pipeline into your kind of lead pipeline, the more you increase your chances of finding a good deal. So don't just focus on MLS, on Zillow or whatever, because in some of the hotter markets, like the properties that even make it to the MLS, they've been looked at by like 100 other people already and they passed on them. So chances are they're not even that good. But all the like really good juicy deals are happening off market, private networking, private connections. So we've been very successful in Kansas City with that. In today's market, I fully feel confident that there are deals. It's just not as many, but you can find deals, if you look hard enough. Again, it probably won't be on MLS, but if you kind of can make it work, especially use maybe some creative financing strategies to kind of go around these high rates, you can be successful. We just, kind of focus a little more operations. And then obviously I have my businesses, and my kind of software, platforms that I spend a lot of time on that have a such high return on my time, nowadays that, I wouldn't say real estate took like a back burner, but it just like, if I'm picking which one to focus on right now, it would, chances are, will be my software.
Well, so why don't we hop into that? Because that's one of the reasons why I was super excited to hear about that, or to get you on the show today. I mean, sorry, so we could talk about this. So what's this software journey or part of your life?
So I'll run through it real quick because I know we've been chatting for a while already. But backtrack a little bit. Again, I got out of the Navy. I got into a more traditional career, and I ended up doing software development, which I basically self-taught myself. I did finish a degree in information technology, and I had like a little bit of software web development in there. And then I hopped around a little bit on a few different jobs in San Diego, all very technical, because my work in the Navy, I actually worked on electronics. So it was kind of more of a hardware, kind of electronics technician job. So I knew I really liked that field. But I wanted to try the software side, because usually with electronics is like hardware or software, where usually people pick one of the two. And I just loved software, kind of much more. It really resonated with me. So that's the path I went. And then again, I was in that mindset. Remember, I was like, hey, am I gonna, I have this real estate thing going and it's going good, but it's slow, right? Real estate is not like a get rich quick scheme. It's, you're building your property one at a time, two at a time, but still it's like you're just building your kind of nest egg. And then I was working this job and I was like, okay, well, you can only get raises so often at your work. And even if you kind of hop around, there's usually a cap. I was kind of, I guess this is what, when my entrepreneurial spirit started to fire up, I was like, well, let me try to do something on my own here, as a side project to start with. I was, because I have time, I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't, that's what my wife says, like, you, like she's like, if you're retired, you're not going to know what to do with yourself, because you always have to be productive, like 12 plus hours a day. And that is true. So I was working, doing real estate, then I still had some time, and I was like, let me try a side project. And that's where actually idea for DealCheck, which is our flagship platform right now, was born. So DealCheck is a property analysis app. And I remember I built the first version of it for just mobile devices myself, while working full time, just kind of as a hobby project, both to learn more about software development, because I was, just learning it, and I wanted to have a career in that. So this was, one of the great things you can do if you're trying to shift careers or get into a new field, is like do some side projects if it's possible. And software, it's definitely possible. And then they're great for your resume, because you can actually say like, hey, look, here's my self initiative. I worked on this software. I made it. And anyway, so it was kind of more of a side project, personal project, for my future resume, whatever you want to call it. But I did go through the whole process of like finishing the app. It was very bare bones at the beginning. Publish it on the app stores, because it was just a mobile app actually back then. And then I just shared it with a few like other investor people that I knew, other just friends, family, and they actually really loved it. Because back then, this was probably 2015, 2016. This was when the App Store was like not just starting out, but it was pretty in its infancy. There were not a lot of apps, and the ones that were there were like really clunky, like that old, like if you see it, you'll know, like the old icons, like the old UI. But anyway, so I had this app, and then it started getting some traction. I didn't really expect it, to be honest. I didn't do anything that they tell you to do in business school. I had no business plan. I had z I
You just
did
went
pretty
for it.
much zero research. I did, and it was like, I was here. I am with software knowledge. Here I am with real estate knowledge, and here I am like looking for ways to analyze properties a little more efficiently than using Excel, which is like the
Everybody
normal, I guess,
uses
or the
Excel
old way of doing.
somewhere in
Yeah,
their
yeah,
journey.
yeah. So I was like, you know what? And I was driving around a lot. I was like, it'd be cool to have some on my phone. This is when phones were starting to become like part of our daily life. And that's how I got the idea initially. And again, didn't really expect much of it, but it grew. It started growing organically. People were downloading it. They were finding it on the App Store. I was sharing it, and I just kept adding more features and kind of working on it. And I kept my career the whole time I had my regular job. So this was just side project. Wasn't making probably pretty much any money for the first like 2 years, I would say. Just pennies, it paid for, I guess, my time a little bit, whatever infrastructure costs I had. But then I do remember, like, this was back like 2017 or something. Like, it kind of too, and I think that's when I re we we I also finished the web version of it. It started really taking off. And that's when I remember I was like at the crossroads. I was like, okay, I have the safety of my career, my job, obviously, that I was pretty comfortable in, it was good pay, whatever benefits. And then I had the software project that got just started as a small little app, that I didn't expect much, but it started to grow. And I had to pretty much make a choice of which one I want to dedicate, more time in. And I took the leap, and I said it's going to be DealCheck. I didn't actually quit my job like right away. I still stuck around there for a little bit, but pretty much all my focus, all my effort, went to the software project. That's when I started expanding our team. We got a few more developers and marketing folks on board, because I knew I couldn't do it all like I was doing up to that point. And that's when I would say DealCheck just kind of took off. Both, once we got marketing on board and started actually doing, proper advertising and just outreach campaigns, obviously more people found out about it. The actual developers that I had helped us build out the features much faster. And then, very soon it kind of eclipsed, obviously, all the income I was making at my job, even at the real estate. And then I just pretty much went full time on it. Today, DealCheck is probably one of the most popular apps for property analysis in North America, I'm very happy to say. Again, never really planned on it. The idea wasn't like super novel, I would say. Again, there were some apps, and there are still even now that do that. But I would say it was 100% execution. And that's actually, I read a lot of forums and books too. But a lot of people, I think, in business specifically, place a huge emphasis on ideas. And ideas are important. There have been businesses that were built around just fantastic ideas, right? Just like very novel ideas that these were like one of a kind products, one of a kind apps. There's just never been anything around that. And there is value in that. But I would say the majority of businesses, the majority of very successful companies don't actually have some novel or breakthrough idea behind them. What they do differently is the execution piece. For us, I'll give you an example. With DealCheck, again, we were kind of slow. We were a smaller team, but one so we couldn't like add a million features in a month, and we still can't. But one thing we did is we were relentlessly focused on customer feedback and kind of customer satisfaction. So from day one, I answer every single email that I get from our DealCheck users, and I get tons a day because actually there's like a little automated sequence. When you sign up, eventually you get an email from me like asking you how you're doing, how's DealCheck working for you, and a ton of people reply, and most think like, oh, I'll never hear back from this dude, he's whatever CEO of some company that has hundreds of thousands of users. No, I actually read and reply to every single one of those emails. I get so many, it's funny, I get so many surprises. People like, oh my God, you actually replied. But I do, and it's very important to us. Yeah, I am a real person, and even though it's might be an automated email, but I do get the responses. So we've been so focused on customer feedback, and actually, like probably for the last 2, 3 years, almost every feature that we've added was as a direct, request from our customers, and people notice that. People say like, hey, I asked you for this feature, like even if it was 6 months or a year ago, then we do add it, and we send them like a little personalized note saying, hey, hey Nathan, thanks so much for asking for this. I know it's been a while, but we finally added it. It's like such a nice touch. And how many companies really do that? Like not many. Like when's the last time email I got from Facebook or I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Like some other big app that you use for them adding your feature. So there's little things you can do just in the execution, utilizing your resources better, that you can put your business kind of differentiated from other people, be more successful than companies with much bigger budgets, development teams or product teams or whatever have you, just by kind of being closer to your customer, listening to them more, not trying to be greedy is another big thing. Like we've kept our prices super low. If you go to DealCheck, our pricing, A, we have a free plan, which a lot of our competitors or companies don't even do anymore, and B, our prices are like a couple cups of coffee a month, whereas some competitors will just try to juice out thousands or hundreds, like the most they can get. And we're just not about that because we wanted to make this tool as accessible to every investor, beginning, low, they don't have a lot of capital or sophisticated. So yeah, we've been extremely successful with that. Again, I can talk more and more about business ventures, and that's a whole other obviously ball game with you kind of being the CEO and managing your team. But again, I would say that kind of actually doing it, as I mentioned, with real estate and learning as you go has been like so instrumental. I think that is, everybody learns differently, and I have read books on entrepreneurship and software development and all that stuff like over and over again. But the more you actually do, you go through the process, you iterate, you try new things. Sometimes they don't work out, sometimes they do, and you just learn from your mistakes and use that as a stepping stone. I think that's the absolute key to any venture, and it's just like taking that first step is so important because that's when you start your real learning, in my opinion, as opposed to just kind of sitting back and saying, you know what, I'm just gonna, read a few more books and maybe then I'll be comfortable with it.
Yeah, 100%. And just, I'm sure it was a lot about execution for DealCheck, right? I wouldn't underplay it too much either. It is one of the best tools out there that I know of. And I'm not just saying this,
Thank
obviously,
you.
because you and I have already talked, but it is the tool that I use every single day. And I think it just does things much faster and it's much easier and cleaner to use than many solutions out there. So it is an absolutely fantastic tool. And we'll link to the tool itself in the show notes, of course. We also have a promo code that we'll drop in the show notes here. But with that, Anton, I want to start getting you out of here because I want to be mindful and respectful of your time. It's been fantastic and a fantastic conversation. I'm curious to hear from you because you talked a lot about books, right? And you said you read 40, 50, 60 books, whatever it was, for a few years there. What book would you recommend for our audience here?
Yeah, so I would say it's a hard question, but for a general kind of self-improvement, I think the book that made the biggest impression on me was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. It sounds like it's a finance book, but it's really not. I think it's like a life education or a life purpose or like a goal setting book. It's hard to really define it. It's a bit philosophical, it's a bit general. So if you're looking for like a super practical book, that's probably not it. But I remember this book like really opened my philosophy, if you would, or line of thinking to the point where like I do believe that if you dream of something and you really believe that you want it, you really believe that you can do it, you will achieve it. It doesn't matter 100%. What it is. It could be in finance and in real estate and business, in personal relationships, in physical, pursuits, sports, whatever. It's just a great book. It's not very long. I think it can really, if you're kind of open-minded.
It's a great book, yeah. It's been recommended a bunch of times on the show as well.
I'm sure. It's kind of cliche, right? But everybody
reads it. It's a great book. No, it's
a
great book.
It is a good book. I will mention another one, Nathan. I know you said one, but for real estate specifically. So I actually read a ton of real estate books, and a lot of them I didn't find helpful. I actually found like online kind of articles and stuff like that for specific things better. Yeah. But I did like The Millionaire Real Estate Investor. This is by Keller, I believe, Gary Keller. And that book is good for like a general picture on real estate, especially if you want to make real estate a big part of your financial future or your passive income stream, and you're just not like sure, like, well, how many properties I need, how do I scale a portfolio? That book it's not very practical. Also, it's not gonna like walk you through how to buy or rehab a house, but it's going to kind of give you a vision of pretty much how to build wealth with real estate, like as a general blueprint. So I think it's a really good start for aspiring buy and hold investors specifically.
Yeah. Awesome. And typically on this show, after we ask for a book recommendation, we also ask for a software, a tool, or an app recommendation that helps you in your day-to-day. I don't know if that's DealCheck or RentCast, your other, product in your portfolio.
I'm going to have to mention one of those.
Well, you go for it.
So I would say, especially since we're talking about real estate a lot, I would say DealCheck would be my go-to recommendation. Again, I'm the founder, so it's kind of self-promotion.
You know what? I'll say it. I'll recommend it for you if you want. I sell DealCheck. I use it every day. It's the best tool out there.
Okay. But no, seriously, guys, if you're looking for property analysis, head over to dealcheck.io or download the DealCheck for iOS or Android. And it's like, you can start using it for free. It's a great tool to learn real estate analysis. Or even if you're kind of been doing it for a while, I always encourage people to try it. Again, there's a free plan, so you don't lose anything. And we do have another platform that Nathan mentioned. We did a good webinar on it a few months ago called RentCast. And again, that one you can start using at rentcast.io. That one's more geared towards looking up rent estimates for properties and helping you track your portfolio, maximizing rents, especially because, like I mentioned earlier, that's kind of an aspect a lot of investors ignore. But if you can raise your rents a little more, each month, each year, you can actually grow your cash flow a lot. So that one you can check out at RentCast.
And it's also another fantastic tool that I use every single day. And I've already told you this story in the webinar that you mentioned, and I'll drop that in the show notes as well. But for those who want to find out about those webinars and, go watch them, they can go to everyreitool.com and they'll find both DealCheck and RentCast. But a little story here. So when we have a property of ours that gets, vacated and we're trying to place a new tenant, my property manager will send me the estimates from RentCast. From Rentometer first. So then I go take that and I compare it because I use rentcast.io, and RentCast typically is more accurate and oftentimes higher than Rentometer. So I always go back to my property manager and say, use this price because I got it from RentCast, and ultimately we always rent pretty much immediately. So it's another tool that I use calories every single day.
That's great to hear. Yeah, it's I do think we're a bit better than Rentometer. That they just, I don't think they change. They evolved.
I don't think
much
anything's
over the last
changed
like
there.
10 years.
And yeah, I
No,
said
even the
that.
website,
No.
but.
Yeah. All right. Awesome, Anton. Last question here before I let you go.
Yep.
How can people reach out to you?
Yep. So I'll give my direct email. It's Anton at dealcheck.io. So it's Anton at dealcheck.io. That's my my business email, but it's my personal email too. So if you guys have any questions about our software platforms, I do actually see all the emails and will reply, even if it takes me a little bit. Or if you have questions about my real estate journey, stuff like that. I'm always happy to connect to listeners and other investors.
Awesome, Anton. Thank you so much. It was a great and, you know, great conversation. A pleasure to have you on. Hopefully we'll have you on again soon to talk about some more of your, you know, endeavors and, you know, successes in life. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Nathan. I had a great time.
Thank you for joining us and being part of our conversation with Anton. We've gathered all the important links from today's show in the handy show notes below, so make sure to check them out. We have promo codes and links to the tools that were mentioned in today's episode, Rentcast.io and DealCheck.io. What a fantastic conversation we had with Anton. Now, if we could ask you for a little favor, and if you found any value in our content, please like, subscribe, follow us on the various, you know, platforms, as well as leave comments. We read all of them and we love to engage with our audience. Thank you very much, and on to the next one.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.